enormous listening world, and welcome back to Big Mouth, the pop culture talk show for the moderately obsessive. My name's Andrew Harrison, and I'm joined by two top draw guests. The journalist and broadcaster Miranda Sawyer cut her teeth at smash hits. She writes for The Observer, talks on Radio 4, and generally puts herself about as a soi-disant mouthy northern git. Her book, Out of Time, about dealing with middle age when you're of the generation that fools itself that it will be forever young, put the fear of God into us earlier this year, but it's a jolly good read and it's very funny too. Miranda supports Manchester United, likes New Order, and might as well wear a giant comedy Frank Sidebottom head. Hello, Miranda, how are you today?
You really have.
So you've been touring the arse out of your book this year, haven't you? Does it feel like you're touring a hot album?
No, it's quite weird because in some places you feel like, oh, this is great. Loads of people want to, you know, engage, and you sign lots of books, and you feel like Alan Bennett or something like that. And then you go to other ones, and it's a bit like you've just turned up and you're a travelling salesman selling one book. You know, hand to hand, you've travelled for 7 hours to tell one book kind of thing.
And then people turn up and they say, I think your sitcom's awfully good.
Yeah, I've
good to see your what I call live show.
Yes, exactly. So I actually really like it, but that's because I quite like showing off on stage. Mm. So it's fine by me. It gets you out the house. You get to talk to people. Mm-hmm. We had a bit of eruption at the Cheltenham Festival.
Really?
Yes.
We had literally Festival Barney.
Yeah, so it was quite, it was really full.
Was it the Random House Ultras up against the
it was really odd.
Chatham and Windus Intercity
firm? It was quite odd. So it was mostly middle-aged ladies, which is fine. And I was on stage with a writer called Krista D'Souza, who's written a book about menopause. Mm. Anyway, there was a bit where we were talking about sex, which I think was fine. And I said, middle-aged sex, sometimes difficult, sometimes all right. And this lady took a gin. She took a gin, and she took a gin because I wasn't representing. And she said, I'm 55 and I'm having brilliant sex. And the thing I really liked about this was that she was because I'm fond of an anorak, and I personally think it's quite sexy. She was in an anorak, and she said that she was 55 and having great sex, and she was not happy with the negativity on stage. And then others chipped in. They chimed in saying, yes, too much negativity about sex on stage. It was amazing. Cheltenham ladies.
Hotbed
as such.
We are going out on the Sunday morning on Soho Radio, so please keep listening. Don't get distracted. Also with us is Hannah Verdier. Like Miranda, a veteran of the hits. These days, Hannah watches all the telly all the time so that you don't have to. She also writes about music and general stuff for The Guardian and The Telegraph. Hello, Hannah. How are you today?
Hello. Very good. Thank you.
What was your personal high point at the Smash Hits universe?
Oh, just so many. Probably the one that stands out was when I went to New York to interview John Bon Jovi, but got so nervous, and he wasn't the nicest person.
Shall we swap John Bon Jovi's face?
Yeah, come on, let's hear this one.
At one point, because I was so nervous, I was talking with my hands, I got a bit animated, and at one point he accused me of doing the sign of rock with two fingers aloft, and I completely just lost it and had to get through the interview. Were you doing the rock sign at me? No, of course not. You're John Bon Jovi. Why would I do that? What's your favourite colour again? And it was just one of the worst interviews of my entire life.
Of all the people you can do the rock sign at.
Yeah, why would he be offended?
I thought he'd find it quite amusing. I didn't try and touch his hair or anything in the notes.
I picture him sort of eating his dinner, holding his knife and fork while doing the rock sign with his fingers.
That's what I thought. He'd do it all the time.
I interviewed him as well, and I thought he was awful, actually. He was one of my worst interviews. And the reason why is because he plays the famousness before. He won't let you acknowledge the rock. So you cannot acknowledge the rock because he's a famous person. And so what you get is a very bland, very boring, I do charity work and everything's great kind of person. Yeah. And it was one of the few times, I mean, this never happens, where the PR came in and said, 10 minutes, and we both went, no, I think.
That's exactly what I did. I was like, oh, no, I'm on my last question now.
I think we're done. He's a really, really difficult interview because he's blandy, 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 blandy.
It's always a pain when PRs come into an interview, but I sometimes wish they would come in and just poke the subject and just go, can you be a bit more interesting, please? This person has travelled all the way from London Zone 2 to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm coming with my interesting stick here.
Absolutely.
Poked up your bum.
Yeah, the interesting stick, we need that. Also with us.
Not on this show.
No, on this show we're full of interesting sticks. You just heard him. On the 48-track Solid State Mixing Desk, the one-man chinny chap of podcasts, it's Matt Hall. Hello, Matt.
Can you touch up your eyeliner, please, Andy?
Touch up my eyeliner, absolutely. That's the name of the second album. Are you still bouncing around to the Tribe Called Quest album as you were last
week? Absolutely loving it. Yeah. And going back and listening to all of that old stuff and... yeah, having a bit of a delve into all the solo tracks, and really, really fantastic.
Have you had to find the non-explicit censored version for the kids? Because it is loads of swearing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but no, because actually I kind of I disagree with this argument about hip-hop being too rude for children. I agree that it is too rude for children, but I kind of think you wouldn't sit them down and in front of a... of Scarface at 4:15 in the afternoon when they get home from school and go, here, kids, watch this.
Well, you say that.
And yeah. I kind of think that hip-hop albums are the same. There are some that are safe for kind of after-school stuff, another which is slightly more mature.
Is there an appropriate age to talk to your kids about the sweariness of hip-hop?
Well, the other problem is that, and Miranda will point this out, I'll agree with this, I think, is that stuff slips through.
Right.
You kind of...
All the
know,
time. You get I'm very admiring of your attitude, like but I've given up.
But the Mark Ronson album
yeah.
with... Uptown Funk on it, get it for the kids, give it to them for their birthday, realise that the song after Uptown Funk is by Mystical, which has the largest number of...
Is it deeply problematic?
It's not deeply problematic, it's very sweary,
right.
But it's also brilliant, you know.
But you can also do... It's interesting, kids, because kids are quite often a bit like, oh, they said a swear. Mummy, they said a swear, and we can't listen to this anymore.
Yeah.
But... I don't mind the swearing. The deeply problematic ones are the ones I'm worried about. But I'm much more likely to point that up. So if they're listening to something and I go, you know what, I don't really like this because it's completely derogatory to women, so we're not listening to that, then it's fine. And that sweary stuff, I have to say, I don't really mind. You know, they live in London. When are they not going to hear the swears?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a life skill, though.
It is a life skill. Let's crack on, shall we? The biggest thing that's happened this week has been the release finally of The Grand Tour featuring Double Denim Die Hard Jeremy Clarkson and the other two. Apparently, it's a programme about cars. It's an Amazon exclusive and a major gamble for their Prime streaming service. Budget for the whole thing is supposed to be a stupefying 160 million quid for 36 episodes, and they're clearly hoping that it will do for Amazon Prime what football did for Sky. The reviews have been generally rapturous, but most importantly, what does Big Mouth think? We're going to talk about it after this. In order to get you in the mood, here is What Else? The National Anthem of Dad. Here is Back when Turner Overdrive, you ain't seen nothing yet. Let's rock. Back when Turner Overdrive, you ain't seen nothing yet. Say what you like, that is a tune. Well, we're talking about The Grand Tour with Jeremy Clarkson, Richard Hammond and what's the other one, Brian May? Full disclosure, I would walk a mile in the pouring rain not to have to listen to Jeremy Clarkson, but Devil Woman Miranda, you like cars. Did you enjoy The Grand Tour?
There's elements I enjoyed and there's elements I do not. You have to switch quite a lot of your mind off. But that's fine. You know, that's telly, I think. And switch quite a lot of your mind off and accept that these are 11-year-old boys. If you accept that they are 11-year-old boys, it's fine, it's a good show. The bits I like are actually the bits that aren't staged. So the way that the show is the way that the show has always been. So there's incredibly staged, jokey parts in a studio, and although this is now a tent, and then there's the bits where they review the cars. And the bits where they review the cars, I really like. There's a cliche. Everything they do is a cliche. So you have to accept that everything that you see is a visual cliche and is a cliche. So you see a car, there's loving shots of the spoilers and there's, you know, shots of the exhaust.
Car
and all this,
porn.
You know, it's car porn and that's fine, I accept that. But the little bits I like are the bits where they're driving. So when they're driving and they slightly lose it, because they are actually quite good at driving and presenting, you see a bit of their characters that isn't quite so staged. As stagey as it is, you can see, telly is a truthful enough medium that you can see the joy in their eyes or the slight fear.
Yeah.
And those are the bits that I like. All the other stuff around it slightly drives me mental, but it's not meant for me. I have to say that I think the bits in the tent, which is like the new studio, are not as good. It is less successful. I think they need to do something about the tent. The rest of the stuff, the content, all that is fine. But the bits around the tent, so the terribly staged jokes, they've got an appalling waste of celebrities in there. Like there's a great celebrity, Armie Hammer, incredible celebrity, really funny, brilliant. And I thought, they're going to have Armie Hammer on.
Do you think they didn't think he was big enough?
Yeah, and he's massive. He's a massive celebrity.
Yeah.
What I kind of took from it, and I haven't watched much Top Gear before, it is not for me, but I kind of took from it that they were really on it and really careful about how they presented the cars. The rest of the stuff, their references to pop culture and stuff, were kind of just really off. There was one bit where Hammond referred to something as being like out of Trainspotting, and he referred to him as Begsby.
Yes, I noticed that.
And you kind of think,
oh my God.
And you kind of think you could have it was a long shot. He could quite easily have reshot that or even just dropped in a retake over audio. And he didn't. The producer decided not to do that. The whole thing with the Hothouse Flowers at the start was just weird. That is and was, and surely everyone remembers, a Nescafe ad.
Yeah.
That was the soundtrack to that Nescafe ad where the I could see, you know, a lovely
Clarkson's
day.
Anthem it now. Is
but it's where that woman drives in a Volkswagen Beetle to the coast and sticks makes a cup of coffee in
this is for Amazon for the whole world. They might not know that. Tanner, television expert, looking at this from the point of view of this, you know, this is a gigantic chunk of mass entertainment. Do you think it's going to work for Amazon that they can sort of shift people across from collapsing in front of the telly to sitting with your, you know, with your phone on the bus in the morning, drinking in these gigantic vistas of the American Midwest?
Do you know what I do? Mm-hmm. Ranting aside and everyone saying, oh, it's not for me, I watched it as it was supposed to be watched with my dad and turned up really, really loud. Mm-hmm. And it did everything. It ticked all the boxes. I mean, the opener is actually quite emotional. It's really cinematic. And Clarkson's...
It's like Mad Max, isn't it?
Yeah,
that Clarkson's... really got on my nerves, that opening. The whole sort of self-referential...
Why? It's Clarkson, babe.
It's so sad. Andrew, did you
sit down with an open mind?
No, I tried. I got sacked from the BBC. This is awful. Look at the pouring rain. Oh. You got sacked because you punched a colleague.
Yeah, but that's not the... Yeah, but that's not the, not to be... You know, obviously you shouldn't punch anybody. We know that. But that's not the point. The point is he's launching a programme. And the only way you can launch it, if it's a programme like that, is to say this programme is better. That's the only way you can do it. And that's absolutely what it did.
I mean, if you take out anything, any preconceptions about Clarkson, because we've all got them. Yeah. But he is, the way he does it and the way the three of them gel, I mean,
I think they're really good presenters.
Yeah, Chris Evans on Top Gear, he's a brilliant presenter, but he's not Top Gear.
Yeah.
This is basically Top Gear by another name, obviously.
It's Top Gear plus a whole load of money. Yeah,
and what is it, 130 million for the lot?
I don't think
it will make people think, oh, I'm going to subscribe to Amazon. Well, I think it's an amazing, amazing piece of TV.
But I think, do you not think that... Because I was already subscribed to Amazon Prime. I have small children. You know,
you did it by mistake last Christmas, like the rest of us.
No, I didn't. I really like Amazon Prime. Sorry about everybody. What I think is that there's a certain type of person that will go over to it, actually, because that program is aimed at them. Yeah. And Amazon Prime isn't that hard to use.
But if you spend this much money, and the head of Netflix was interviewed last week, and of course he's going to kind of drop a kind of spoiler, he made the point that, A, they think it's a lot more than the $160 million that has been quoted. And B, Netflix have all the old Top Gears on their service. So he made the point. They can look at the stats and work out if it's worth it. And that's why they didn't go for it. Yeah. They thought it wasn't, you know. And the thing is...
Financially worth it.
Financially worth it. It wouldn't attract enough people.
Yeah.
It wouldn't attract... It's interesting how it's gone mad, and everybody, maybe with wanting to beat the BBC with a big stick in the British papers, has reviewed it, said it's fantastic. I actually kind of searched online to try and find American reviews. Mm. I found two. Mm. I found one in Variety, which was lukewarm, and one from IndieWire, which wasn't, you know, and there wasn't one on the New York Times, there wasn't one in the Washington Post, there wasn't one
in
LA.
Because it's been treated as the biggest thing since the...
But it's not making waves in America.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because actually we're applying old television attitudes to a new world, aren't we? So they've made an old television show, which they have. It's incredibly old, you know, not old-fashioned, it's what it was, but applied it to a new... a marketplace, and the main problem I did think was that they're bringing it out every week, which, you know, one a week, that's okay, I don't mind that. But the point is, if you like a program, you want more. That's what everybody does now. They binge on everything. So whether it's a podcast or whether it's a film, or, you know, you need more stuff, and there isn't anything more that will make people go back to the BBC or go back to Netflix. And that's the kind of problem they've got to make a lot of content in order to make it work, really.
But I think it will extend their reach, because if you think of the demographic for Top Gear, they may not naturally be Amazon users. They might not think of watching anything, indeed, on their computer even.
Yeah.
So this is bringing... You know, this is introducing
plus, if you'd
them
put
to
it all...
Amazon. It's a massive marketing exercise, and it's so well done, I think.
Going back to that dynamic between the three stars we were talking about a minute ago, like I say, you know, I'm not exactly core Top Gear demographic. And to me, in a lot of ways, it was always kind of fresh, you know, to see this stuff. Mm. I'd never really seen them, apart from out the corner of my eye, or a couple of clips kind of thing. And I thought that the kind of dynamic was almost disturbing. It's basically, let's watch the bullying of Richard Hammond. Let's watch Clarkson assert himself at the top of the triangle. All the banter is actually, there's this sort of needly and kind
Don't you have a group of friends like that,
every
Andrew?
Joke, every joke. Well, actually,
every man should.
Because, well, this that's what I was going to go on to say, because I think that is a distorted picture of what men are like.
But
I think there
also,
are a lot of fellas like that, but
exactly.
No, all.
I think, no, of course it's not.
But
it's not
the punchline to every
blokes.
Joke is, you're wrong, and yes, you're stupid, and your hair's wrong.
But
that's not humour.
I know, it's not, but it is a certain type of humour. It's a
bounce,
kind of golf
mate.
Club.
It's bounce.
Yeah,
which
impeccable
I hate
banter.
I loathe banter.
But it isn't even banter. It's golf club. It's golf club humour. So banter is young men. You know, banter is YouTube. You know, what I kind of thought was quite interesting is actually if you look at the three men in this, you know, every joke they do is really, really punched hard. You know, it's really, you know, presented. You know, here is the joke. You get it? And it really reminded me of some of the YouTube stars that there are around. And I don't mean the kind of Zoellas. I mean the ones that play football and do FIFA, which my son is interested in. They obviously do not have this budget. They do not have this budget at all. But their bants is almost exactly the same.
There's always a studio gimp, isn't there?
Yeah, well,
who
also
takes the rap.
Yeah, and also they work. So what they do is it's just about playing FIFA or actually football, and who is the best. And if you're the worst, everyone goes and it's exactly the same. That's why it reminds me of 11-year-old boys. Yeah. It's a really, really similar kind of vibe. You have those roles, and actually, people find them very secure and warm. You know, I don't, but there's a lot of people who do, you know.
I just watch it and think, who's going to stage the intervention to rescue Richard Hammond from this abusive relationship?
Stuart Lee.
I know
Stuart Lee
does
it.
That's the pathetic thing about it. He's got Stockholm syndrome.
Stuart Lee actually does a routine about the relationship between the three of them, and he posits that actually May is the one that they pick on.
Yeah, definitely.
For being I'd Captain Slow and for being kind of rubbish. And Hammond's the one going, go on, Jeremy, do it again. Just don't pick on me.
Hammond is the salacious crumb to Clarkson's Jabba the Hutt, isn't he? Just sitting there sniggering.
He looks slightly kind of terrified at times. There's a
funny thing about how old-fashioned they are. Given that we pointed out they are old-fashioned, but you know they're kind of. I don't know if you noticed at the beginning, Clarkson's got kind of bangles on. Did you notice that? So he's got a few bangles on because he was like, you know, they're in the middle of the desert, so obviously somebody gave him. Yeah. Richard Hammond's styling is really weird. It's really weird because obviously his own styling. He has big hair, kind of swept back. He has, you know, a kind of necklace on. It's so 1980s. It's like nothing has happened.
Yeah. Do you think that nobody said at any point from Amazon said to Clarkson, Jeremy, we're giving you all this money. Can you do a couple of months in the gym?
He changed his appearance and got styled. Everyone would be like, oh, look, he's got style for Amazon.
I'm
going to
give him that. Much as I can't stand it, I'm going to say he is at least being himself. And I'm going to give them all this, right? Much as they get on my nerves and much as I spent my life running away from people like that, trying to escape them, moving to London where it's full of ponces and there's nobody like that left. I will give them this. Compared to today's crop of real men and Milo Yiannopoulos and Donald Trump I would love to spend more. I'd love to spend time with Clarkson and May and Hammond rather than that lot. I'll praise them to the skies compared to today's real men.
Do you know, you might have the opportunity to do so, because one of the things that I kind of dug out while looking at trying to track down reviews in America is that they're putting together a social network called Drive Tribe. And the three of them are launching it, and it's basically cars.
Let's get on the internet, people. What can we do?
I love the way they're launching it. What do they think? There isn't one already. You know, there's loads and loads of people doing it already. Oh, here's a new thing we've heard of.
This is amazing, by the way.
So, what was your favourite bit of the show?
I think, apart from the massive cinematic opener, I quite liked their little bits of humour, you know, where he's saying, Clarkson's really playing up, saying, it's the internet, I'm not going to get sacked, I could pleasure a horse. Oh, and everyone's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
That's exactly, you could think the people who it's aimed at home would be going, yes, go on, Clarkson.
Miranda, what was your favourite bit?
Yeah, I couldn't stand any of that. I literally like the bits where they're driving the cars. I like the bits where they're in the car and they're doing something that's very, very tricky. To drive a car like that is very tricky, and B, to present while you're driving the car like that, very, very tricky. Yeah. And you see their personalities.
Yeah. Matt, what was your favourite bit?
My favourite bit didn't actually happen, but for a very short nanosecond, I thought that the guy they got to replace the Stig was Mike Skinner from The Streets, not some big American NASCAR driver.
I assumed it was.
And I thought that would be fantastic.
Right. Well, my favourite bit is that I now get free delivery on all Amazon products until I cancel, which I'm going to do. Don't forget, it's in the calendar. Okay. Please, God, let's move on. Let's have a bit of music. Every week, we ask our guests to bring in their current earworm and editor's recommendation, if you like. Hannah Verdier, what have you got for us?
Well, to cleanse the palate after all that car talk, I've got a lovely French disco duo. Not that one, but I've got the new Justice, which is not groundbreaking. It's very good. It's a little bit Earth, Wind and Fire.
Amazing.
Which is why I like the track Pleasure.
Well, there we go. Well, as Clarkson said, French pop music about as interesting as an inside-out horse. What a cretin he is. Let's have a listen to Pleasure. By the laws of attraction. Pleasure by Justice from the album Woman. Choice of Hannah Verdier there. Okay, right. Change of scenery. Kate Bush created one of the great and maybe the last art pop sensations with her Before the Dawn live extravaganza in August 2014. They were her first live shows in 35 years, and it was one of those rare occasions when a musician can pull off a residency, when a show becomes a cultural moment, and when it's not all about the hits. Now, Before the Dawn is immortalised on her new live album. What does it say about Kate Bush? Is it for everyone, and is it any good? Let's have a taste first. This is And Dream of Sheep. Little light shining, deeper and deeper. Kate Bush with And Dream of Sheep, live from her live album, Before the Dawn. Live albums never get this much attention, do they? But this one is being treated like the latest grand work. Miranda Sawyer, why is that?
It's because if you are a journalist and you would like an interview with Kate Bush, you better be nice.
It's not just that, though, is
no,
it? Because
it isn't
your likelihood of getting one is pretty thin these
days.
Yes,
exactly. It's that, isn't it? So she is a special jewel that only comes out occasionally, and she is different. You know, and I think that if you went to those gigs, which I did not, then obviously, you know, the people I know who went there, nearly all of them, had an amazing time.
Yeah.
It was incredibly moving. And I can completely understand why you would want this live album. However, if you didn't go, it's quite a hard listen, I think.
Yes.
Because, not just because of those embarrassing live bits where you're kind of talking to the audience and you're a bit like, oh, not that. But it's to do with the way that music can sound live. And there's a particular kind of drumming that drives me mad. And that sounds really picky, but I can't help it. It's pop music. I am picky. And the drumming is very session musician-y. And it completely skews my... I find it very hard to listen to.
The odd thing about it is, usually in the past, Kate Bush records they all have a different sonic palette. You know, different instrumentation, different sounds, different noises. And this is a band sounding like a band. And it sort of... It kind of crushes it a little bit. Hannah Verdier, what did you think? Are you a Kate Bush devotee?
Strangely enough, no, I'm not. Mm-hmm. When The Kick Inside came out, my parents played it to me and I was like, can we just go back to the Motown, please? This woman is a bit scary. No, I'm not. And also, I don't think anyone really needs a live album, because if you went, that's a great gig.
Yeah.
But I don't think it ever comes across in the same way. Mm. And also, I really, really hate it when people don't just play the hits. I mean, what is wrong with them?
I don't really agree with that, but I would say I don't mind, because if it's somebody I like and I'm in the moment, that's the point of being at a live gig, isn't it? You can be taken all sorts of places. That can be absolutely amazing.
To all intents and purposes, it's a completely new work, isn't it? There's only three hits on it, and most of it would be fresh to people. So if you're the kind of person who's going to hammer refresh in Chrome to try and get your tickets, you're just as happy getting something brand new.
In that case, I'd probably be more likely to listen to an album full of non-hits than stand at a gig full of non-hits. But that's just my own... my own prejudice.
I think it's quite interesting also that given that, you know, essentially what people want now is an event, an experience, you know, that's because we can all get whichever albums we want whenever we want. And that was a proper event. It was a proper experience. People were really moved. They were fighting for tickets. You know, everyone I know had a really great time. So therefore, I think actually this does work, because, you know, I've been to Stone Roses gigs where people are going, oh, this was absolutely the most awful thing. But actually, if you're in the crowd, it was like completely brilliant. Now, I might not want to... Well, actually, maybe I would want to listen to it, because if you can remember it, you're kind of recalling your own experience of the actual event. But I just think if you weren't there, it's quite difficult.
Yeah. Also, yes, it only has three bona fide single release hits on it. But actually, The Ninth Wave is on Hounds of Love, which was a kind of multi-platinum selling number one album. So people do know that. Mm. And the other one was the Sky of Honey, which is the other kind of song suite, was from Ariel. So again, people will know it.
Do you think though that the production of it, if you come to it with, you know, fresh ears, which we are kind of coming to, there's an element of it which not doesn't sound amateurish, but it doesn't sound as sophisticated as she normally is.
Well, it sounds and like a band rather than a carefully. Really...
But it's a very good band, isn't it? It's a band who's played with, you know, members have played with Miles Davis, and they're still, kind of creme de la creme.
They're incredibly, you know, they're incredibly great, but it's just that weird thing of what you want from an album. You know, do you want a sonic world that you can go into? What do you want on your earphones? Yeah. And so to hear a kind of live band like that, unless it's kind of going ram a lam a lam a lam a lam a lam a lam, it doesn't really work.
Digging around on kind of various message boards, Kate Bush message boards, which is more scary than digging around on various kind of Top Gear message boards, I can tell you that for nothing. It was suggested some time ago, I think, by Kate Bush or her people, that they were going to release a DVD of the
which
event.
Would be much better.
Mm. You need the visuals,
which
I think.
Yeah. Given that, you know, the first thing that you see when you look it up on Wikipedia is that she spent 3 days in a flotation tank to film all these things of her kind of floating in the sea.
Yeah.
Would be quite interesting.
Now, Matt, you really enjoyed them a little bit, didn't you? The kind of little drama play about the ship. You thought it was the best thing.
I have a theory about Kate Bush, and I don't know why, but on the day that she was on Top of the Pops in a leotard dancing around, and the vast majority of my male counterparts obviously had a moment when they were feeling particularly vulnerable in 1978
they
or whatever.
They imprinted on her like a little newborn duck.
Yeah, I must have been out playing football at that point, because I don't get Kate Bush at all. I don't. Whereas I think that is the reason that most kind of 40-something men in Britain do.
You did complain to me that you thought that your advance copy had accidentally had an episode of The Archers put in the middle of it.
I can't.
But do you think it's... Let's
tell the listeners what it is first, before because it goes into a drama, doesn't it? It goes into a drama about a shipwreck, and there's kind of quite Radio 4-ish voices ringing up.
These two very actors, a younger man and a playing father and son, going, where's mum? And kind of, you know...
Where's my portfolio?
And it's just really... Odd in the way that the worst is staged.
It's awful.
Worst radio drama.
The key bits
can
on
be
albums
staged.
Are always awful. They're just embarrassing.
I think what's interesting about her is actually, I mean, you know, she has a vast audience. You know, she has a vast audience. But actually, I mean, do you think a lot of them are straight men? Because it seems to me that a lot of people who are fans of Kate Bush are straight women and gay men. Actually.
No, yeah,
there's
I don't.
A lot
I mean,
straight, there's an awful lot of straight blokes. You can't be as big a figure in such a male area as rock music without having a lot of straight male fans.
Yeah, that's
true. You know,
because
men buy
and actually, the music's really reminded me, and I know that there's a kind of Dave Gilmour connection.
Yeah,
it really was Floyd prog.
That's what I think. Yeah. I think, you see,
and,
I think
and that
if you
kind
come
of really
from...
surprised me, because I always thought, you know, from what I've heard, I always thought there was a lightness, but actually the telling a story, the kind of staginess, the, you know, late era.
It's what you want your pop music to do, isn't it? So do you want your pop music to have a kind of folk, proggy, experimental element?
No, thanks.
Yeah. But we don't.
Can we just go to the disco?
Yeah, exactly. We don't.
Yeah,
to be in a room full of people who like dance music, essentially, whatever form that is. And if you like dance music, it is quite hard to click into the Kate Bush world because there's too much, it's too wordy.
Although, to be fair, my favourite band of all, the Pet Shop Boys, would do a show exactly like this. It would be full of bangers, but it'd be ridiculous, sprawling.
But the Royal Opera House.
Drums wouldn't be there.
You'd be surprised. That's the real live drums at the last show.
Oh my God.
Heretical.
But the last show, they did one hit, one newie all the way through, and that was just perfect.
Mm. Yeah.
Bush, take note.
But I think what you've got here is the fact that, you know, it's art with a capital A. And I think if she had come back and gone, hey, missed you for 35 years, people, let's go straight into Wuthering Heights. Oh, it's Army Dreamers. It would have actually disappointed. People want to be weirded out.
I am very happy that Kate Bush exists. That's what I kind of think, you know, because she's like, she's an absolute outlier. She's a complete revolutionary. Yeah. She does all the things. And the thing I quite like about her is nobody really copies her. Do you remember that thing that you once said about, which I thought was very insightful, about Trainspotting? It didn't start a genre. You know, Trainspotting came out and there it was and we loved it, but there was no genre of Trainspotting films. Yeah. And it's the same with Kate Bush. You don't really have a genre of Kate Bushy likes because she's so unique. So I think that that's a very special thing to have.
Do we think that this entire kind of Before the Dawn live extravaganza thing, I mean, has it changed her into the kind of person that people go, oh, yes, I always liked her. I always liked her.
I think when she came back, everyone claimed to like her slightly more than they really do because everyone's got their one artist that they would actually click refresh for those tickets for. Mm. And I think a lot of people suddenly became Kate Bush fans.
That reminds me, Slick Rick's playing next week.
Yeah, but he's actually doing a 2-hour drama about being shipwrecked.
Fantastic. Well, at least he's got the eye patch for it.
Yeah, he has. So we think it was a bit Amdram, and maybe it's not everybody's first Kate Bush album.
No.
Okay, they should start with a kick inside like you did, shouldn't they, Hannah?
Yeah, exactly.
And be changed forever. Okay, let's have another editor's recommendation. Miranda Sawyer, what do you have for us?
I've got A Tribe Called Quest. I'm sorry about this, because I realised I suggested it and it's already been done.
No, but it is kind of the album of the year, really, so I think you're allowed.
It was really weird, actually. I wasn't super excited. Maybe it's just me, my age. But I thought, oh, great, new Tribe Called Quest album. That's great. You know, I love Q-Tip. You know, he's brilliant. And then I put it on and it's so... It does so much what I wanted it to do that I find, you know, that I find it quite inspiring. So it just, you know, a lot of albums or life in general, a lot of kind of pieces of work find a seam and then they mine it and they mine it and they mine it and mine it and you come out of there. And the Tribe Called Quest is just all over the place. And that's why I really like it. It's really brilliant. And you can listen to one track and think, oh, it's all right. And then you come back to it 3 days and it's something completely different. It's great.
Well, it's worked its way into my brain because I keep finding myself on the bus sort of singing to myself, Muslims and gays, boy, we hate your ways. So I'm going to get arrested for being a massive racist and it's all going to be the fault of A Tribe Called Quest. This is A Tribe Called Quest from the album We Got It From Here, .. Thank you for your service. This is The Donald.
Yo. Step back, them no want no problem, brother. Step back, them no want no problem, brother. Five dog.
That was The Donald by A Tribe Called Quest from the album We Got It From Here. Thank you for your service. And it's not about Donald Trump. It's about their late mate and band member, Five Dog. Choice of our guest, Miranda Sawyer. Okay, right. We have a couple of music news stories to handle for the week. Firstly, the very unexpected news that London's flagship club, Fabric, closed down by Islington magistrates in September after drug deaths and withdrawal of its licence, is to reopen with new conditions and new security arrangements. It's a pretty big win for the clubbing world. Fabric will pay Islington Council's legal costs, but not from the £320,000 donated by clubbers and supporters. So that's the good news, and we'll talk about it in a minute. The bad news of the week is that after an extended period of erratic behaviour, Kanye West was hospitalised with, in quotes, exhaustion. Police were called to his home in Los Angeles after what was described as a psychiatric emergency. And this comes after a week where first he told an audience that he would have voted for Donald Trump if he had voted, and also slagged off Hillary Clinton and Beyonce. He then played just three songs and left to a chorus of boos and subsequently cancelled his entire tour. Miranda, we've got used to Kanye West as this kind of mixture of amusement and annoyance. You know, look at the funny thing that he's doing now is with, you know, his daft wife and his narcissistic tweets. This does seem to suggest that it's a bit more serious and maybe we should stop pointing and laughing. He looks like he might be in a bit of a bad place.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly common result of excessive fame and excessive work, and you know, he has cameras on him at all times. He feels like he has to dominate not only the music industry but the fashion industry, and hey, maybe he might run for president and he's representing, you know, every black person on the planet. You know, in order to become a celebrity as big as him, you have to be some kind of narcissist. I mean, there's just no question about that. And narcissism is fantastic. It can get you to be Donald Trump. Great. But there is a massive flip side to it. And if you are an artistic person, which he genuinely is, and he is incredibly creative, he's just obviously having a mental breakdown. And there is a difference. And you can tell. You know, you can tell. If you watch some of the clips of him on stage, you can tell. And is there awful, there's all, that awful thing of feeling betrayed. You know, so there's something about him that he feels betrayed by Jay-Z, by Beyonce, by the world in general. He feels betrayed.
Paranoid even.
And exactly. And that is absolutely, it's paranoia. And once you get like that, then everything, you know, the stars are watching you, you know, meaning the stars as opposed to the sky, as opposed to, like, you know, Jay-Z. So that's the problem.
Yeah. Hannah, this kind of TMZ world of kind of waiting for people to break down in front of us and, you know, oh, look, Britney's shaved all of her hair off. Mm. Oh, look, somebody's collapsed and making a fool of themselves in public. The way that social media and the instant availability of stuff on the internet basically made all the gossip magazines redundant, because you can just sit and watch a constant feed of famous people melting down. This actually says more about us than famous people, doesn't it? It shows we are actually a prurient bunch of people.
We are. It's got totally out of control. And I think the famouses, if they do it well, they absolutely love it. If you look at what the Kardashians have done, and to an extent what Kanye's done, because it's not just the music, it's the whole brand and his life, and the cameras are there.
Yeah.
And there is an insatiable urge to consume all this. And like you say, if something's from yesterday, we've forgotten it. But also, I think with Kanye, he's human and he's obviously got some issues there. And it's near the anniversary of his mother's death, which he blames himself for. Yeah. And if you think about Kim Kardashian being robbed, whatever you think of that in Paris, it still happened and he's probably worried and he's got two kids and
the strange thing with the
there's
Kardashians,
a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah, the Kardashians themselves seem to be completely impervious. That, you know, when Kim Kardashian was robbed, it seems to be the only time she'd shown any vulnerability over anything at all. Everything else just bounces off her. And Kanye West is like that.
Do you not watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
I'm not really keeping up with Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
It gets quite emotional at some point.
Does it clash with Top Gear? Is that a problem?
Yeah, that's right. But you know they're putting that on for the show. No, it's all
I think what's interesting about famous people in general is that, you know this, if you interview a famous person, mostly they are a person, you know, they are a real life person. It's quite hard to forget to remember that when you see them surrounded by that, but actually when you meet somebody, it is a human being that you meet. Now they might be nuts and they might have a nuts life and stuff like that, but it is still a human being. Everything that he refers to is essentially it is a personal betrayal. You know, my mum died, my friend doesn't contact me, etc. In the way, I mean, it's kind of quite human stuff that he's talking about. He's just talking about it on a massive
scale. Also, everyone kind of talked about the Glastonbury thing. That image of something pressing down on top of him as he's performing is kind of really, you know, you look at it now and think, okay, he literally is carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Let's talk quickly about Fabric, which is much more fun. Has a club ever won before? Has a club ever won against the man? This is the first time. Even the Hacienda, when they sort of got reopened, it was a temporary victory, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what worries me about Fabric, to be honest. I mean, if you had the Hacienda is much, much more chaotic, and it was a much more chaotic
violent
time,
yeah.
And it was violent, and it was essentially about drug wars. But the thing that worries me a little bit about it is that, because if you are a nightclub, you can never win this war. There will always be somebody in there on drugs. It's just flatly, there will be. And you can have as many, many safety, kind of concerns. You can have people testing, you can have everything. If they want to shut you down, they will shut you down. So it seems to me that this is fine. It's absolutely great. And essentially, it's a PR war, and they won. Yeah. But it may well happen again.
I sort of think this may be a little bit of a turning point, because for the first time you've got the mayor of a major world city, Sadiq Khan, putting himself very much to the forefront of it. In fact, there were complaints that he was trying to take credit for Fabric getting its license back. You know, he's appointed Amy Lame as the London Night Czar and made a public commitment to preserving this kind of thing. So we've sort of crossed a bit of a line there, in that it's acknowledged that clubs and dancing are good for cities like London.
But then you have to alter the laws, don't you? Because what's interesting about that is Fabric is a fantastic case, but Fabric essentially is not bothering anybody. Look at where it is. I mean, there's nobody really lives there, or if they live there, you've made that choice. The problem you've got actually is around areas like Soho, and where you literally have, you know, a cinema, and there were two offices above the top of it, the Curzon Cinema, and they decided to change them into residential homes, and they started complaining about the noise of the projector. Hmm. So you have a big problem actually with the laws around clubbing and around
entertainment
and around
of any
noise.
Kind. Yeah.
And there are ways around it. In Australia, they have a different kind of approach. In some I don't want to say counties of Australia, but that's completely
whatever
wrong, isn't
got
it? Districts of Australia. You can have a thing. So if you exist, whatever you are, whether you're a resident or whether you're a club, if you're there first, then the person that comes in has to adapt to you rather than the other way around, and we don't have those laws.
Well, I think the likelihood of us around this table going to Fabric when it reopens again is a bit slim, a little bit on the slim side, but let's...
I'm very happy it's reopened.
I'm very happy as well. Yeah. Let's celebrate with one of the hundreds of thousands of pre-Fabric tunes. This is Simeon Mobile Disco from 2007. This is Hustler. Hands in the air, that was Simeon Mobile Disco and Hustler. Okay, we're coming to the end of the show. It is time for Closing Time Chatter, where we ask our guests to pass on the story or the idea or the feature or the argument that's been obsessing them this week. Hannah Verdier, I believe you are in the world of Mariah Carey right now.
Oh, I always am, but this is peak Mariah time. Mariah's world is about to totter onto your screen. She has done her reality TV show.
Yeah?
It is everything you need from Mariah. Instead of a talking head, she lounges on a fainting couch. Yes, she has a fainting couch.
Oh, that's so great.
In a corset. She never dresses down. Her boobs are always out. She's really warm because she's such a diva. She doesn't have to be horrible to everyone because everyone knows the consequences. And it is just fantastic.
Isn't this the one that's caused her to split up with her multi-millionaire fiancé?
I'm not not sure it was the show that did that, but I don't want to spoil it for anyone. But there's a little wedding planning involved.
Oh, right. Which channel is this on?
So this comes to the E channel on the 11th of December.
Non more E, yes.
The greatest. And I think it's the greatest amalgamation of channel, celebrity and pure escapism.
Are there puppies and kittens involved? Does she walk around with a kitten and a, you know, at all times?
She actually makes a bit of a knowing wink quite a few times to the demands about puppies and like, oh, wouldn't it be great to have those puppies here? And there's one bit where she's planning the wedding. This isn't too much of a spoiler.
Okay.
And she's basically ordering in Noah's Ark for it and then goes, do you think they knew that I was joking there? So it's fabulous and she's hilarious.
Marvellous. Miranda Sawyer, I believe you've also been watching quality television.
Yes, I'm afraid we have. We've been watching Strictly. Well, I know this is probably incredibly naff amongst the present company, but anyway, our family watched Strictly. Well, actually, no, my husband doesn't. He walks out of the room, but me and the kids watch Strictly.
Same as my house.
All right, you grumpy old men.
We do the dance.
Yeah, so we do the dance. So what's interesting, it's fine. It's like Christmas on the telly. You know, there are bits you have to mute, but, you know, the dancing itself is fine. Ed Balls, that's the interesting bit about this show. My kids love Ed Balls, right? Kids generally, they love him because he did Gangnam
Style. If you'd said that a year ago, you would have thought that, you know, that sketch on there, that sketch on the Armando Iannucci show where it's a load of little girls who've got posters of Lord Denning on the wall of their bedroom. I love Lord Denning, he's my favourite Lord.
But they love him because he's got a great dance partner who's the person who choreographs everything. And he did Gangnam Style, which, of course, every kid loves. But also, because he is quite crap, he really tries, and you can see the effort. So by the end of it, he is so tired. He's absolutely knackered. He's right there. And all the judges, the really brilliant thing about it is the judges don't know what to say because he's so bad that they just say things like, OMG. And they don't know how to mark him. And last time, the only thing they could say is, you're very assiduous and you try very hard. And it completely wrecks the whole thing, and that's why I like it. He's a disruptor within it because always those characters go out early. You know, people love them for 3 weeks and then they're out. But he hasn't. He's got past the
vital part,
which is Blackpool. He got into Blackpool. I know you don't care about this.
Beyond me. Yeah.
And now has gone on. And loads of other dancers.
Is he going to win?
No, I don't think. But he is, you know, they always mark him down and he doesn't go out.
Is he like the weedy kid in the sack race who gets given a special prize because everybody thinks that he's
and
a weed?
You know, the other thing, he's actually improved, though, I think.
He's improved.
And when he's dancing, he's going like,
one,
bum,
two,
bum,
three,
bum.
Four.
You can see his mouth is moving.
He's in the
zone. Counting all the way through.
He's totally
in the zone. So good.
God. Matt Hall, you've got a thing.
Yeah, I'm just really intrigued. I'm surprised that you haven't picked this one, actually. The Lincoln Experimental Satellite.
Les One.
It's kind of like it was launched 50 years, more than 50 years ago. It was a kind of experimental satellite, so they were trying to kind of figure out how satellites worked. It didn't work when it launched. It went into the wrong orbit. It's been spinning kind of madly out of control.
Yeah.
After a couple of years, its batteries burnt out. It stopped sending signals back. It started sending signals back 50 years later.
This is totally Quatermass.
Totally Quatermass. Only brilliantly, it was discovered by a guy in North Cornwall.
Fantastic.
Who realised it started sending signals back. Basically, it's somehow, something's clicked inside it, and it's getting power from solar panels, but because it's spinning madly out of control on a really weird orbit, it turns end to end every 4 seconds, and so its solar panels only get the sun for a bit. Mm. So it's got sending back this really ghostly signal.
This is like, and this is a John Pertwee Doctor Who. I think I've seen it.
Some of the more kind of hysterical areas of the internet have claimed that aliens are trying to speak to us through this satellite.
Of course.
But I just think it's just a brilliant piece of it. Kind of, it's like Wall-E comes to life.
I see your face. He's so excited.
We're going to wrap up the show. I'm going to go and Google Les One. I like that. It's a very 50s name, Les.
It's Lincoln Experimental Satellite. There was Les One to Les Nine was supposed, but they only got as far as seven, and before NASA or whoever yanked the money.
Is it Americans then?
It's MIT put it together, but built it. You know, it was the Lincoln Laboratory at MIT. So that's
with a name like Les, you'd expect to be the Australian space program. Les
sending back. Obscenities.
Well, my closing time chatter, because I'm a serious person, not like you lot. I'm thinking about fake news this week and Facebook and fake news and the fact that fake news looks. It seems like fake news could well have tipped the American presidential election. What really got me is Zuckerberg claiming that, you know, fake news is nothing to do with Facebook, And as the people on the Slate Political Gabfest, the podcast that is a great inspiration to this one, said, you don't get to claim credit for the Arab Spring and say, oh, yeah, we did that. Yeah, social media, we did that. We made that happen. And then when it's something you don't like the election of Donald Trump, turn and say, oh, no, nothing to do with us. We have no power in this, nothing at all. Meanwhile, at the same time, Facebook says, oh, well, we can't possibly control fake news. It's for the community to control fake news. We've got faith in our community to drive this stuff out. Meanwhile, going into China, reopening China, oh, yeah, we'll censor all the real news you want. We'll knock out the real news. It's just we'll keep putting Supreme Patriot and the Waterford Whispers out for you.
Anyway, Ed Balls.
Yeah. I just thought we wanted to end on a little bit slightly serious. Basically just give everybody a massive downer by the time they finish listening to the show. So anyway, that's our show ending on a massive downer. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our special guests, Hannah Verdier of The Guardian and everywhere else, Miranda Sawyer, whose book Out of Time is out now. Remember, you can hear this show again and, of course, all of our archive again at audioboom.com/channels/BigMouth, or you can subscribe at iTunes, just search for Big Mouth in the podcast section, and of course give us a 5-star rating because, you know, just do it. And you can follow our podcasts and features at facebook.com/BigMouth UK. Thank you very much. That's another one in the bag. We'll see you again next time.